Wenjie. It's very nice to be here again. So today I'm going to talk about...
Is the microphone on? I can't hear you.
I think it's on. Maybe it's too low. How about now? Yeah. Okay. Okay. Today I'm going to talk about a work done with my advisor Xiao Gangwen. The topic is about non-invertible anomalies and topological order. The paper has already been published if you're interested. So before that, let me first thank my advisor Xiao Gangwen, who have taught me so much during the last few years. And also I would like to thank Shu Hengshao, where I have shared many fruitful discussions with him about this work and the related work following. So the topic I'm going to talk about today is about boundary bulk correspondence. In particular, when the bulk is a topological phasis, we ask what the special things can happen on the boundary states. And by special things, I mean comparing with a d-dimensional system that can live purely on d-dimension. So any additional properties of a boundary theory that cannot appear in a purely d-dimensional theory, we can call that special or anomalous. And we are all familiar with such kind of examples. For example, when the bulk topological phasis is in integer quantum Hall, we know that the boundaries can be a single electron moving in a single direction. And such kind of 1D system cannot exist on any one-dimensional lattice. So we can call this an anomalous system. And experimentally, this anomaly is shown as the integer quantized electric Hall conductance. This kind of bulk topological order has no exotic excitations in the bulk. In general, we can have another kind of topological order where the bulk can have anionic excitations. For example, we can have a fractional quantum Hall states. Then generically, the boundary is so-called chiral Luttinger liquid phases. Such kind of boundary states can have fractional electric charge. And experimentally, it has the phenomena to have a fractionally quantized electric Hall conductance and non-vanishing thermal Hall conductance. And in general, the ratio between the thermal Hall conductance and electric Hall conductance does not satisfy the Weltzmann-Franz law for a free chiral moving electrons. So this kind of topological order has a feature, it has anionic excitations in the bulk. And anions has such kind of properties that if you bring two anions close enough, they may fuse into another anions. And we take two same types of anion and you exchange them, the total system will pick up a phase, which in general is neither a boson or a fermion. So it's called anionic self-statistics. And when you wind around one anion around another, the system also pick up a phase. We can call it anionic mutual statistics. So in general, we have a large zoo of anion models. Such kind of anion model actually have not a non-chiral boundaries, not like the fractional quantum Hall. So there will be no thermal Hall conductance. And we want to ask, for such kind of bulk topological orders with anion excitations, can there still anything special happen on the boundary? So today, my goal is to tell you that the answer is yes. before I tell you the, how to understand the special property, let me first tell you what the applications or usefulness of this kind of study of anomalous boundaries. By studying this anomaly, we found it's a generic way to obtain the all possible boundary series of a given anion models. We can obtain all kinds of gapped boundaries and all kinds of CFTs in a systematic setting by solving some simple eigenvector equations.
Not physics related, but could you, I think you can just pin it to your shirt now, the amplifications are not. You don't need to hold it that closely. Yeah, that should be fine, I think.
Okay. It's not really rotating in the right direction.
It seems to be okay when you just leave it loose. It's when you put it too close to your mouth that it gets deafened.
Okay. So from this solving the same systematic equations, we can obtain all the boundaries of a given anion model. For example, when the bulk is in the toric cone, we can find the two gapped boundaries, and we can also find that all unitary CFTs with central charge smaller than one, except four special cases, can all be the boundary critical series of toric cone. So at the second application, I want to show you that this anomalous boundaries allows us to study the stability of boundary anion models. So when the boundary is in some critical phases, in general, it's described by some CFTs. This CFT can also describe some purely one-dimensional system. Then we can compare the two systems as a boundary or in a purely 1D system. We found that in general, the two has a different relevant set of relevant perturbations. And in general, on the boundary of anion models is more stable than the purely 1D system. For example, the icing CFTs can appears in the boundaries of toric cone. It can also describe the transverse icing model as a critical point. On the boundary toric cone, the most relevant perturbations will be this Majorana mass term, whose scaling dimension is 1. And on the boundaries of transverse icing model, which is a purely one-dimensional system, the most relevant operators is the spin operators with scaling dimension 1/8. With all that, let's try to understand the boundaries of anion models. But this question so far is being too general. So to understand that, let's accumulate some intuitions from purely 1D systems. Let's recall how we describe the low energy physics of purely 1D systems. So consider only low energy excitations. When the system is gapped, essentially we just need to count the states in the ground states. And so that's, we just need to record some numbers. And when the 1D system is gapped or gapless or critical, we have a powerful tool called conformal field series. And we are more or less familiar with that. For example, we know that the spin 1/2 Heisenberg models can be described by a CFT with SU2 symmetry. Its central charge is 1. And this transverse icing model I already mentioned at a critical point is described by icing CFT. This icing CFT has another name called minimal model labeled by M34. It has central charge 1/2. Essentially, it's a spin model which on each side you can take spin up or spin down. And the CFT can allow us to predict some experimental results. For example, the specific heat here will be some fractional rational number that's proportional to the central charge in a correct unit. And a less familiar example is the trial critical icing model. It's just the little bit more more. It's almost the next the simplest model than the icing CFT. Essentially, it's icing coupling between sides. Just now that on each side, we no longer allow spin up and spin down, but also allow a vacant. So such kind of model is also a kind of minimum model labeled by MP45. It also has some rational central charge. So in general, by studying conformal field theory, we can predict special discrete values of specific heat for one-dimensional critical models. So we can list them out in some tables. So actually, why CFT can allow us to do that? So essentially because we can compute the complete spectrum by studying the partition functions on the torus. A torus, what is a torus? We can think start from a complex plane and put a lattice on it and take a unit cell and identify the two parallel edge. This unit cell defines a torus. And its shape is parameterized by a complex numbers. And then the partition function defined on a torus, we can define that by modify a little bit our transform matrix. We no longer just translate along the imaginary time direction, but along some shielded direction. In this way, when compute the whole spectrum, we can found that the spectrum encode not just the eigenvalues of energy, but also the momentum. So in this way, we can solve the complete spectrum. So, and partition functions on a torus have another beautiful.
If you know the whole spectrum, you can calculate the partition function. From the partition function, how do you get the spectrum?
Actually, the partition function depends on this formal parameter. So it's a formal summation over all the states. So it will be a power expansion as a function of this tau, basically e to the I 2 pi tau, and with some coefficients. So this is a formal sum, and each component records the states. Yeah, I can show you the detail.
Actually, Wenjie, can I move the thing a bit further away? I guess we can slide it down a little bit. Yeah, I think that.
So as we said, a torus is equivalent to pick a unit cell. But given the lattice, there are equivalent ways to pick a same unit cell. For example, start from here, we can do such kind of transformation and get another unit cell describing the same lattice. And we can do this kind of transformation. This complex parameter tau goes to minus 1 over tau. And we are picking up another unit cell. But essentially, the partition function should be independent of how we coordinate the same torus with picking different unit cell. So a partition function that has such kind of properties that is invariant under this reparameterization of the same torus, we can call it modular invariant. So in fact, just by solving the partition functions, that is modular invariant, we can completely solve all the models with central charge less than 1. And they're parameterized by single parameter called P. And all of them has a unified name called minimal models. So we have accumulated enough knowledge about purely 1D system. Let's now start to study the boundaries of anion models.
Sorry, just one second.
modular invariance doesn't imply unitarity, does it?
No, it's a unitary CFT less than one can be fully determined by modular invariance. So we notice that if we bulk is in some anionic model, the proper description is to have a vector pattern functions. This is natural because now in the bulk, or we can have different anionic sectors. It falls into sectors naturally. Say, start from the vacuum, we can create two anions, leaving one in the bulk and one bring it to the boundary. Then, under time evolution, this single anion persists, so it's always distinguished from the vacuum sector. And when an anion exists on the boundaries, depending on if it is a gapped excitation or it can be dissolved into the boundaries in general will have different low energy excitations. Therefore, for each, depending on which anion in the bulk, we should describe this low energy excitations by one component of Pachin functions. So this is a bit abstract. So let me show you on the examples. The simplest examples of anion models is this Z2 topological order, and it can be realized on the lattice by this toric code. Let me remind you a little bit. On the lattice, the toric code it defines in terms of plaquette terms and star terms that totally commute, so we can solve them exactly. So, but here, we only care about the anionic data. So, and we only care about some very simple anionic data. Here, there are four kinds of anions, including the vacuum. Three of them are bosons, and one of them are fermions. Their self-statistic can be summarized into this 4x4 matrix. And mutually, E and M are mutually semions and similar as M and F or E and F, and their mutual statistics can be summarized in this S matrix. We call this T and S the topological TS matrix. So before we can construct the vector Pachin functions, let's describe the boundary excitations falling into different sectors. So I'm going to show you that the toric code have a boundary Hamiltonian that is the same as the transverse Ising model. So let's start with the vacuum sector. So our bulk is the vacuum. And then the boundary, and we start with boundary that is in the M condensed boundaries. And then we want to describe a lattice model, an effective lattice model for the E particles. So we when on the boundary, a site is empty, we record it by spin up, or sigma z equals to 1. And when it's occupied at the E particles, sigma z equals to minus 1. So since on the boundary of M condensed boundary, E is a gap excitation, so it has an energy gap, U. It's recorded in this sigma z term. And this E particle can hop around, so we can model it by this sigma xx terms. And we can shift the whole Pachin function by the constant energy so that the ground state energy is zero. So in this way, we can obtain exactly lattice Hamiltonian that is the same as the transverse Ising model. It describes the dynamics of this E particle. So, but this is not exactly the same as transverse Ising model. What's the difference here? In fact, since our bulk is in the vacuum, so on the boundary, we can only allow even number of E particles. So this puts a global constraint that this Z2 symmetry, we are project our Hilbert space to this Z2 even sector of this Ising model. And since E particle is moving around a ring, so the boundary condition in general is periodic.
Sorry, since M has condensed, shouldn't I expect a dynamical boundary condition on this sigma?
We have no we have no odd number of m particle on the boundary. The m particle is also even. So in general, going around a ring is still periodic. So then, when the box is in the have an odd number of e anion, means that on the boundary there's also odd number of e anions, and this means that effectively the Ising model is projected to the Z2 odd sectors, and we still have a periodic boundary condition. And next, if we have m anions in the box, then there means there's another n anions on the boundary. Then and a total even number of e anions. When this e anion is going through an m, it's a pickup a minus phase. So the effectively the Ising model have anti-periodic boundary condition now. And similarly, when the box has a fermion, we have our Ising model is projected to the Z2 odd sector with anti-periodic boundary condition. So in summary, we found that the transverse Ising model can describe the boundary of Z2 topological order. However, the Hilbert space were naturally separated into four sectors. And in fact, we noticed that given the some topological order with discrete gauge symmetry, the anions labeled by two index. One is called flux index, the other is called charge index. And the flux index bringing to the boundary will become a boundary condition constraint. And the charge index on the boundary will be the symmetry projection of the boundary Hilbert space. That's why the boundary, each component of boundary partition function should be labeled by an anionic index. So now we're ready to construct the partition function. So we are only interested in the low energy excitations in the low temperature limit. In this limit, if there is a gap state, it contributes to the partition function as a zero. If it's a gap state, will be contributed to some terms recording its energy. So let's start with this M condensed boundaries. Then since M is condensed, we have a single ground state when the bulk is in the vacuum sector. So the boundary for this vacuum component should be recorded as a single state, the ground state, so it's recorded as one. And when the boundary has an E excitation, it's when the bulk has a single E particle, the boundary has odd number of E excitation. It's gapped excitation. So on the partition function, it's zero. And when the bulk has a single M particle, and when we can bring another M to the boundary, it's essentially have the same energy as ground state since it's condensed. So in this component is also have one. And similarly, the F component is zero. So in this way, we obtain a vector partition function describing a gapped boundary. They are all integer values. And in fact, we know that this is the smooth boundaries realized on the lattice toric code. And running through the same story for the E condensed phase of boundaries, you can find that there's this vector partition function describing the E condensed boundary. On the lattice, it's also called the rough edge boundary. So that are the story for the gapped boundaries. Now let's consider the gapless boundary at the critical point. So the rough answer is we are going to have an Ising CFT. But what's the vector partition function here? So at this critical point, just from some simple knowledge from Ising CFT, we know there can be this finite number of gapless excitations.
Yeah. You mentioned there are gapped boundaries and gapless boundaries, that they can be changed like they are relative ratio between the sigma z and xx term are different, right? And are they controlled by the bulk parameters, or how are they related?
They can be separate too on the boundary, because you can design different boundary interactions. And you can start with terms purely on the boundary, all commuting with the bulk, but they themselves are no longer commuting. And they can have different coupling constant. In this way, you can obtain all the range.
Okay, so are you saying that like these coefficients are not only determined by the bulk physics, which is torical?
Yes, it's not.
Okay, sure.
So I think CFTs, the gapless excitations fall into finite sectors. They're called the primary fields. And in the Ising case, there are six of them. And we also know that some of them are Z2 even, some of them are Z2 odd, and some of them have anti-periodic boundary conditions, some of them have periodic one. Then we just put them into the right boxes. And they look like this. And by playing this game, we can find that the solution of the partition function should look like this. In particular, when the bulk is in the vacuum sector, we have the boundary has this vacuum or no excitation, and also the Marana mass term excitation. However, there is no spin excitations. That's the difference from the transverse Ising model. So I'm presenting this label, a little bit explanation, but maybe most people here knows about them. So to characterize a CFT, we need some simple CFT data. One is called the primary excitations. In general, we have a finite number of them, and they have different scaling dimensions. And the excitations on top of the primary fields are summarized into something called a character. And there are chiral characters and anti-chiral actors that purely depending either on tau or the complex conjugate of tau. And the total non-chiral partition function is a formal sum of those characters with a multiplicity matrix, which encodes how we glue the left and right excitations. And by solving the CFT, we just need to figure out this multiplicity matrix. So here you see that for each anion component, I have a different multiplicity matrix. Okay, so in summary, we have reached, by studying the boundary toric code, we can find one particular kind of gapless boundaries that is built from Ising CFT. We also find two kinds of gapped boundaries. They can all be, their low energy excitations are recorded in a vector partition functions. The vector index is a bulk anion index. Now we have one example. What about we want to get more examples? Do we need to construct those lattice models case by case? And for example, if we add those four spin interaction terms, what CFTs we will get? Seems not a trivial question to answer. And more, we know that toric code can also be described by some K matrix, and we would expect that the boundary can be described by some U1 CFTs. Then how do we know what lattice model to construct it? So this game cannot be played case by case. We're looking for a schematic way so that give me any pair of topological order and CFT, I can check if there is a solution of this vector partition function. And I hope my recipe will be independent of particular microscopic construction. And from this schematic way, we hope to learn some universal properties of the boundary series that can live on a particular anion models. So to answer these questions, we already have some hint from the example we studied. We know that the CFT is, we know that modular transformation is a very powerful tool to classify all the CFTs in purely one dimension. So why don't we just play the game here? Let's just perform some modular transformation on the vector partition function we have obtained, see what we get. And this is a very simple game because we actually know how the characters of each primary field transform under the modular transformation. They are summarized by a CFT modular matrix. For example, in the icing case, the T matrix will be some 3x3 diagonal matrices and encoding its scaling dimensions. So a modular transformation on a particular component of partition function will be just some transformation on this multiplicity matrix, which we can keep track of. So then we just perform such a transformation. We perform a T transformation. And what we found that this four component of partition function of icing CFT describing the boundary of toric coat, it transforms exactly as a vector. And the matrix representation will be exactly the Borg toric coat T matrix. So like boundary modular transformation is now characterized by Borg anion data, because T toric coat is the self-statistics of toric coat anions. So is that a coincidence? Then let's check it for the S transformation. We found it also matched this equation. So we figure out that there is a particular boundary Borg correspondence characterized by this vector partition functions under modular transformation. And it can read out the universal anion data in the boundary in the bulk. So is that just a coincidence for that particular gapless boundaries? Actually, it's not. We found that the two gapped boundaries we have been constructed is also the eigenvectors of toric coat. And since the boundary now is gapped, so it doesn't depend on this modular matrix. So we reach this simple eigenvector equations. And in fact, these are the only two independent eigenvectors of this particular S and T matrix of toric coat. So then we can answer the question we posed before. We know that the toric coat can also describe by this K matrix. And let's see if we can get a U1 CFT that describes its boundary. So we plug this U1 CFT. We know how the characters transform under modular transformation. We found this vector partition function also satisfy this equations.
Is there a geometric interpretation of this?
Yes, I'm going to discuss a bit later. So summarizing what we have learned, we propose that a 1 plus 1D series with non-invertible anomaly is a series that has two properties. First, defined on a space-time torus, it has a multi-component partition function, and the component is labeled by the Borg anion index. And second, under torus reparametrization, T and S transformation, this vector transform not invariantly, but covariantly according to 2 plus 1D topological data. And those are the most simple topological data. We only need to know the type of anions, the anion self-statistics, and the anion mutual statistics. And the boundary vector partition function will transform according to the Borg topological data. And this breaking of modular invariance, what we call non-invertible anomaly, can be canceled by the 2 plus 1D non-invertible topological order. I'm saying it's non-invertible because there's given any topological order with anion excitations, you cannot find any inverse of it, such that you stack the two, you get a trivial product states. That's why the topological order with anion excitation also called non-invertible topological order. Okay, so what's the intuition of this anomaly matching equation? So it's actually a very hard problem, but maybe you have some simple answer for this T transformation. We can think T is mapping tau to tau plus one. So essentially x to x plus, plus t. So you can start, think of under a time, time evolution, we rotate the whole system by 2 pi at the final time, time step and gluing back. So essentially, we're just purely rotate a one-dimensional ring by 2 pi. So that should be doing nothing if our system has translation symmetry. However, when your ball has an anion, under this 2 pi rotation, anion winds itself by 2 pi. And we know that in that way, then the total partition function will pick up a phase from anion self-statistics. So a theory on the boundary of anion models essentially will accumulate a phase. So that's the understanding of that T transformation. But it's the understanding for S transformation is a bit involved, will involve some space-time rotation that we can discuss later. So here we have obtained two results. We have already now a schematic way to understand to find all the topological order CFT pair, and we such kind of solving this any anomaly matching equation is essentially independent of particular microscopic construction. But now, can we understand something universal about it?
From the picture just now, it seems is the gradient between the boundary anion and the bulk anion or what?
No, it's just a rotation.
No, just the single anion itself rotates by 2 pi. The boundary anion just dissolved in the boundary. Like it can be some kind of boundary excitations.
But if the boundary has some excitation, shouldn't there be some gradient between them?
So I'm explaining this anomaly matching. So I have a purely block which have single anion inside. So under 2 pi rotation, it's pick up some phase. I also have a boundary partition functions. It also under this boundary modular transformation, it pick up a phase. It's a two phase that can be matched. So let me tell you a little bit how to solve that equation. So the recipe is we fix an anion model and we pick a CFT since we have a zoo of them. Then by solving the eigenvector problem, we just solve that multiplicity matrix, which now has an anion index and also a primary field index. So the, if you trust me, the anomaly matching equation will be reduced to solving this simultaneous eigenvector of this particular a tensor product of boundary and bulk modular matrices. And each of them is roughly tens by tens, so or less than tens by tens. So it's a pretty small scale of eigenvector problem. So by let's see what we can get. For example, we can find that the triocritical Ising model I described before can be the boundary, can be a solution for the toric code boundary. And this one has 6 primary fields and they can form into this vector. So
this only means it satisfies some necessary condition to be the boundary of toric code.
Yes, but actually it's a very strong condition. Essentially, if you just build some like force beam interactions, you can find that it reduced to this. Yeah, we can discuss that. It's very strong condition.
So do you know any?
For, yes.
Do you know any safety present fit?
So for the critical series, we actually don't know any counter example, like any solutions that's not faithful. But for the gapped, gapped boundaries, we do know that for non-abelian topological order, there can be unfaithful solutions. But if that's because we only consider the modular transformation on genus 1, if you also include the modular transformation on genus 2 and construct the same anomaly matching equation, in solving that by combining with the genus 1 solution, you can rule out that unfaithful solution.
Actually, what is higher genus modular transforming on boundary?
You can think this higher genus, has a more formal name called mapping class group transformation. For genus 2, you have such kind of thing. So you have a surface, this is still a 2D surface. And then you can do this modular transformation or dent twist along each of this non-contractile loop.
Oh, you're saying for the boundary, that's your space-time manifold.
Yes, yes. Okay, so something that we actually found that, well, not really, but actually we found that all minimal models, except four special cases labeled by some P that's very high, except them, all of the others can be the gapless boundaries of Z2 topological order.
So what's special about those boundaries?
I'm going to tell you later.
And how do you know it can be? Do you have examples for all of them?
Yes, I can solve it. Like I run it to very high P, like 7 or 8. But if you're not convinced enough, you give me a P, I can show you how it works. What's the rest?
It can be realized in the boundary.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to show you. There's a universal properties of all those minimal models. So before that, that's the first application I talked about. Now let me talk about the second application. We can predict the stability of the boundary series.
Maybe before that, what's special about Hoyer code? If you study instead some other topological order, say double Samuel, do you find that maybe most of the minimal CFTs can be the boundary of the double Samuel?
We found there's no minimal models can be boundaries double Samuels. So that's, I can only do a brute force check. I start from the smallest P, 3, and goes up, and I don't find any of them can be the solution of this anomaly matching equation. And then I know that what special CFT properties this CFT should have, but I still cannot apply it for all the minimal models. But there's some other more involved arguments by other authors that we can discuss that later. But for our recipe, we can rule out all the minimal models to up to P equals 7 just due to our computer or computer power or how I'm interested in this.
So by other methods, you mean Shu Heng's modular bootstrap stuff, or?
Actually, it's Cheng Meng's argument, yeah. So now let's think about the stability of this boundary of toric code when the boundary is in the Ising CFT. So since we only care about stability of the ground states, so we only care about the first component, and we see that there's the most relevant term is this Majorana mass terms, and this has scaling dimension 1. And you can compare this with the Ising chain. In that case, the single partition function always contains this spin field whose scaling dimension is smaller than the Majorana mass term. So in general, this vector partition function, you project out some states. So in general, the CFT in purely 1D is less stable than the boundary series of some anion models. Okay. So we can run a similar game for this example of double Samuel. And for double Samuel, we still have four kinds of anion excitations. Now, one of them is a boson. One is a Samuel. It has one quarter self-statistics and anti-Samuel. They have this kind of matrix in the ball, in the boundary. And we can first find that there's a single gapped boundaries that represent a boson condensed boundary. And then We can also know that the double semion can be described by a K matrix. So we can expect there's a U1 CFT describing these boundaries. Now, you see, in these solutions, the vacuum sectors only contains the vacuum sector excitations. The excitations in this one, the minimum scaling dimension is 2. So it's a marginal perturbation. So contradicting to what we generically believe that this double semion, the critical boundary of double semion always contains some relevant perturbations from our Luttinger liquid intuition. In fact, it has no relevant perturbation. The most relevant is a marginal one. Of course, we actually checked that it's a marginal relevant one. So it's more stable, but not that stable yet. Okay, then I can also, but that's the solution for U1 CFT. We want to know if there's some CFT with less central charge. So for that, I need to solve this anomaly matching equation Bruce-Fully. And in particular, I need to match this particular anomaly matching equation. And just by using that, I can rule out all the minimum models up to p equals to 7. And none of them can be the boundary of double semion. So I can give a lower bound of the central charge of boundary of double semion. Okay, now finally, let me describe what's the universal properties of Z2 topological order or toric code. So let's start with this icing solution we have already found and perform such kind of basis transformation. We get another vector partition function. In particular, the first one is exactly the same as the transverse icing critical point. It's a modular invariant partition function. And the second component is obtained from the first one by a Z2 symmetry action. And the third one is obtained from the second one by an S transformation. And essentially, we found that on this vector partition function, S and T acts as exactly a permutation matrix. So it means that this vector partition function has a Z2 symmetry. And acting by those Z2 symmetry, ST is permutating those different components twisted by this Z2 symmetry. So it means that if I know there's a CFT that has an anomaly-free Z2 symmetry, means I can twist the boundary condition along time and t direction by a Z2 symmetry twist. I can start with this modular invariant partition function, acting by a Z2 twist, and then use S transformation and T transformation to generate the third and fourth component of the partition function. In this way, I can form a four-component partition function. And then I can do an inverse basis transformation. The solution I get guaranteed to be the solution of the anomaly matching equation for the toric code. So the takeaway is that give any modular invariant CFT with a normally free Z2 symmetry, there always exists a modular covariant CFT as a boundary of toric code. So just summarize here what we learn from minimum models as boundaries of topological orders. We found, so all the minimum models, except the four cases, they all have anomalous Z2 symmetries. These four exceptional cases, they have no discrete symmetry at all, no anomaly-free ones. Therefore, they cannot be boundaries of any topological order with untwisted gauge symmetry. And among them, the most stable one has the central charge 1/2, that's the icing model. And we also found there's only two kinds of minimum model, so-called three-state pulse model and trial-critical three-state pulse model. They can be the boundary of Z2 topological, Z3 topological order. And they can also have be the boundary of S3 topological order. And the reason is the similar as before, because only these two minimum model have anomaly-free Z3 symmetry and S3 symmetry. And this Z2, Z3, and S3 are the only anomaly-free symmetries that minimum models can have. So the conclusion is the gapless boundaries of all other untwisted topological orders with discrete group G must have central charge greater than 1. Okay, in summary, in this talk, I have shown you that the boundary of any models should be characterized by a vector of partition function. And the anion index composed by flux and charge will become the boundary constraint, constraining the boundary condition and charge projection of the boundary Hilbert space. So each component does not form a complete Hilbert space. They are not a tensor product of local Hilbert space. And this vector partition functions under boundary modular transformation will transform according to the bulk topological data. So that's just some summary. Okay, here from this scheme, we have some open questions. We don't know the answer yet. For example, we don't know any example that can pick up unfaithful gapless boundaries we have been being solved. So essentially, we can solve the same anomaly matching equation for higher genus modular matrices, and if they give different solutions than the single genus ones, means that some of the single genus solution are not faithful. Like it's not really boundaries of topological order. And since we have so many solutions of a particular topological order, we want to ask if there's all of them can have exact lattice constructions. And in actually, for the Z2 case tutorial, today I'm presenting you an effective lattice construction, but there's also an exact lattice construction you can solve exactly and find this vector partition function. And they also works for the Zn case, and we are working on solving the non-abelian cases. And this is the anomaly of a non-invertible topological order, and when the bulk is invertible topological, we know that the boundary can also have some anomaly that's called the Terhoeft anomaly. So there's a precise relation between this Terhoeft anomaly and the non-invertible anomaly we're talking today. So their relation will be discussed in the coming paper. With that, I want to thank you for your attention. Thanks.
So we have time for
a number of questions. So you said the boundary has to have some anomaly free Z2 symmetry for Taylor code. Why should it be anomaly free?
A formal and precise answer is because both the topological order and the invertible topological order with global symmetry G are classified by this HAP3 cohomology class, and the Tauri code is labeled by this trivial class, and the normally free one, the invertible topological order, also classified by this free by this anomaly free one. A less formal answer is this. Anion models, the anion is labeled by the representation of this Z2 symmetry. And the SPTs are labeled by the group element of this, this discrete group. There's a mapping between the between the group element and the representation. So then, so means this relation only works for like when the two faces are classified by the same cohomology class. That's essentially the gauging and non-gauging process. Tower code is related to the Z2 trivial SPT by engaging the Z2 gauge symmetry. And when the bulk is a trivial SPT, the boundary is some trivial CFT. So it must, the symmetry must be anomaly free.
So for double semion?
Yeah, then the because for double semion, when you engage it, you get this Z2 non-trivial SPT. So the boundary CFT must have an anomalous Z2 symmetry.
And also, you mentioned the relation between invertible and non-invertible anomalies. Can I formulate the non-invertible anomalies somehow in terms of higher form symmetries?
There's some statement about that, but I don't think it's very essential to understand it.
Back to the double semion story. Maybe I remember it wrong. I thought, at least for the 11 two states, if I look at the boundary legendary liquid, there's always a relevant operator, right? So you're saying somehow after you gauge that Z2 operator is forbidden?
That's because I only show you one U1, one solution of U1 CFT as a boundary of double semion. The one I show you is the most stable one. There are other ones at different radius that can also be the boundary of double semion.
Okay. One,
the particular particular level. Yeah. So by adding that exact by adding that marginal term, you can tune to the other radius, and the other radius you have relevant perturbations.
Is there some similar constraint for higher dimensional systems?
We are working on a project of that. The bulk is some one form SPT, and we try to think if the boundary can some gapless Dirac fermions by matching the same one.
What kind of constraints?
It's essentially the same. We still can, because for example, in the 3D case, and the boundary can be some T3 torus. And on some T3 torus, you can also define those stand twist. So that's the generalization of this modular transformation. And then the bulk, if in some topological phases, can also have some topological data. So there's a parallel story of this anomaly matching equation for that.
Actually, for Tower code, do you need one anomaly for Z2 symmetry or two of them?
Just one.
The Tower code has an emergent anomaly free EM duality symmetry.
That's another independent Z2 symmetry.
So there.
That's a global symmetry. But Z2 appearing here for the Tower code is actually Z2 gauge theory. And when I talk about the boundary CFT has some Z2 anomaly free Z2 symmetry, and that's if you then I need to do a gauging process. So essentially, this vector partition function is the boundary of SPT with Z2 global Z2 symmetry. This vector is the boundary of Z2 toric code. So we have same CFT that itself has a Z2 symmetry, but different way to combining them, they represent different boundaries. The boundaries of different topological phases.
Okay.
And you then can consider the EM exchange symmetry. That's a global symmetry.
Which the boundary must have.
No, the boundary does not necessarily have. For example, in here you can see it has, because the sigma field and mu field has exactly the same spectrum if you count the energy levels. So it means that this boundary does explicitly preserve the EM exchange symmetry. But when you write the Tauri code, if you put different coefficient to the star term and the Laquais term, you will just explicitly break the EM exchange symmetry. So the boundary does not necessarily have this symmetry, but it still can have. Like, this is two independent things.
Shouldn't that symmetry even emerge?
It's not all the critical series have that emergent symmetry. This one I showed you have, there's another particular minimal model solution that explicitly break this EM exchange symmetry, even if it's critical.
Maybe this will be discussed in your relation to invertible anomalies, but can you make any statements about the central charge for the twisted gauge series?
That's the double semion is such kind of example.
Yes, you said for gauge theories, you said the central charge is greater than or equal to one.
Double semion is also called twisted Z2 gauge theory, and the bound I put is only some fractional number smaller than one.
Any other question? If not, let's simply joke.